irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us, and welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. Answers for the Family will address many ways of creating greater health, joy, and love for you and your family. We will introduce you to top professionals and talented authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, I would really appreciate it if you could all do me a huge favor. Please forward at least one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from today's subject. And I guarantee you, we all know somebody that can benefit from today's subject. And this is just one powerful way that we can make a positive difference together. Now, before we get to our guest, I want you to know that I am truly grateful to all of you that take your precious time to listen to this show, and especially those who send in questions, comments, reviews, and suggestions, because remember, this show exists for you. Now, if you haven't gotten a copy of our free The Attitude of Gratitude Journal yet, please go to our website at answersforthefamily.com and download a copy. Give it 21 days and comment on whatever platform you listen to us on, what focusing on gratitude has meant for you and your family. Now, a quote, although not from the journal, it is from our guest today, is, "It is not giving children more that spoils them. It is giving them more just to avoid confrontation." So with that, our topic today is also the title of our guest's new book, Children Are From Heaven, Positive Parenting Skills for Raising Cooperative, Confident, and Compassionate Children. Now, I copied a couple of the reviews I found while I was researching the book, one of which said, "This is the single best parenting book I have ever read." Another one said, "I wish someone had given me this book when I had my first child." So with that, our guest, Dr. John Gray, he is the author of the most well-known and trusted relationship book of all time. It's called Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. USA Today listed his book as one of the top 10 most influential books in the last quarter century. In hardback, it was the number one best-selling book of the 90s. So John has written over 20 books, many of which are translated into approximately 45 languages in more than 100 countries. His Mars-Venus book series has forever changed the way men and women view their relationships. Now, I have read many of John's books myself, and I've been to one of his retreats, and he helps men and women better understand and respect their differences in both personal and professional relationships. His approach combines specific communication techniques with healthy nutrition choices that create the brain-body chemistry for lasting health, happiness, and romance. John has appeared repeatedly on Oprah, as well as Dr. Oz Show, Today, CBS This Morning, Good Morning America, and many others. He's been profiled in Time, Forbes, USA Today, and People magazines. And he was also the subject of a three-hour TV special hosted by Barbara Walters. He is an advocate, an avid follower of his own health and relationship advice, as I am as well. So, John, it is great to have you back on Answers for the Family.
Thank you. It's real pleasure. Thank you.
You know, with all the wisdom that you have brought us about relationships, I'm so happy that you have decided to write a book on parenting. So what inspired you to write Children Are From Heaven?
Well, certainly I see how children today, or maybe we could say, are spoiled. There's this sense of entitlement, this sense of oversensitivity. That's one aspect of it. But parents are struggling with their kids. As you said in the introduction, sometimes we give our children too much to avoid arguments. I love that quote. I didn't realize it was from my book. So, but it's definitely aligned with my message, is that we really, you know, a lot of us grew up and we didn't get what we needed. And so then the therapeutic community makes us aware that, well, we need this, we need this, we need this. And many of us as parents, we want to give our children everything we think they need. And part of what they also need is boundaries. They need to experience that they can't have everything they want when they want it. That's a very, very important, you know, a big, big lesson in life to learn, is that even if you don't get everything you want when you want it, you can still be happy. Yeah. And most parents are not aware that if you let a child express emotional reactions of not happy, like frustration or sadness or crying or fear, you know, letting a child express those feelings, not pushing them down, very quickly, if you help them to understand those emotions, they'll let them go. And then they experience that they didn't get what they wanted right away, or maybe they'll never get it, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But they didn't get what they wanted, but they can come back to feeling loved and supported and happy. Even as so many adults can't be happy if they don't have what they want when they want it. And we've become this society of immediate gratification. And one of the counter things to that is, certainly we want to be generous to our children and give them love and support. But it's at a certain point, our children start to dominate. And if they're starting to take on too much, then they start to be ungrateful, as you're talking in the beginning, for what they have. Kind of like if you shower your children with toys, they don't even play with them. They want more and more and more.
Right.
For example, what we did, if you want something more, we would give a new present, but you have to give up something. So you don't have this huge closet and room filled with things. And sometimes when you have to give up something, you begin to appreciate that more. So it's not flooding ourselves with so much clutter and giving to a child everything they want, but giving a child a sense that they give and they participate in the family, that we all share, we all participate, we all don't get everything we want, we try to be fair, and mommy and daddy decide, not you. These are like really important things. And sometimes we let the children decide and we're afraid of their tantrums and their upsets.
You know, I couldn't agree more. And I love the fact that you brought gratitude in it, because part of it is being grateful for what it is that you're getting. But I love the part about having to give something away before you get something new, because I think you also learn the great feeling that you can get by doing that, by giving to someone else that can now go get some form of enjoyment or happiness out of what you've given them. It's such a win-win that it just makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it's a, you know, there's a lot of dynamics to our children today, and often the children are not obeying their parents. Now, I'm not like a soldier saying, you know, you will be happy and you will do what I say. Not, you know, there's a permission of authenticity to be in touch with your feelings, but they can't run everything. That's very, very important. But often parents, mothers particularly, will say, my kids are not listening. My kids are not listening. And they listen to you, but not me. Well, part of that was, you know, I was away a lot of the time out working, and I come home and I get a lot of love and support for that. And it seems like I'm the most important person. I'm also not there all the time. So the kids get a big rush of dopamine. Oh, daddy's home, as opposed to being with mom all day long. And so there's that excitement about me. And suddenly, what would happen is I noticed she was complaining, Bonnie was complaining that they don't listen to her. And I thought, what can I do to help? And one of the things I did to help is to teach the children who's most important. Are they more important, or is mom more important? And this is a really simple idea, but very powerful idea. Children should know they're not more important than your spouse. So I just started doing little things like I'd come home and they'd run to see daddy, daddy, daddy. And the first thing I'd say is, where's your mother? Mm-hmm. And they would, you know, sometimes they jump up on me, I'd carry them, but I would give them not a lot of attention. I would go straight to Bonnie and give her a hug, a good 6-second hug. So they got to see who's the top person here. They watch if they're top, because it's so easy to just come home and, you know, spend time with your kids. You're missing them. They're full of unconditional love for you. So it's real easy just to love them. And then your spouse might be over in the corner, kind of like, why are you ignoring me? Or happy in the corner. It doesn't matter. Those children need to see that mom was number one. And so I trained them. The first thing when I came home, they'd say, mom's here, mom's there, mom's not here. You know, they would know that's the first question out of my mouth is, where is she? The second thing is, we're going to go to her and I give her a hug first. That became a ritual. Another one was, I would be sometimes, you know, coming home and I want to check my emails and I'm on my computer, and and some part of our life together, Bonnie would cook dinner and she'd be cooking dinner in the kitchen with little kids. And she'd say, okay, dinner's ready and everybody come. And they would see that I would sit by the computer and I'd say, oh, go ahead without me. I'll be in a little while. So I said, let me try this and see what happens. If she said dinner's ready, I said, oh, everybody, let's go now. And I'd get up and I'd respond quickly to her requests. So they saw me, and it's not a big give. I mean, you know, from my point of view, it was like, look, I got to do this. It's not that important. I don't care if my food's a little cold. That's my value system. But then I began to value, wait a second, relationship is way more important than anything else. And that's what we have to focus on in a family is the quality of relationship. And often we men don't realize how much of the time we'll sort of just, I'll get to it later. I'll get it later. I'm busy doing this or I'm busy doing that. And that seems reasonable because we'll get to it later. And some women might say, you don't get to it later. I have to remind you and remind you. But anytime a woman asks for some request that can be fulfilled in 3 minutes, something quick, something easy, that's an opportunity to respond quickly to her. Not only does she feel like she's being heard, but the children go, oh, we need to listen to mom. Dad listens to mom.
Well, and I think even more than that, you're also modeling for them the way they're going to be in their relationship when they become adults.
Oh, absolutely. You know, yeah. I'm so proud of this book because these are the parenting techniques I used and developed, but I didn't want to write them until my kids were grown up, but I wanted to make sure it turned out okay because a lot of them are a little not along mainstream. You know, I was raised not mainstream in a sense. There were four brothers above me. And, you know, this is growing up in Texas. And when the kids were misbehaving, maybe not listening to mom or making messes or getting in little fights together, whatever it might be, my mother would just say, if you don't listen to me now, I'll tell your father. Mm-hmm. So now dad, if she told dad, then there was consequences. And the consequences was, you know, this is Texas consequence. He'd pull out the belt and you'd bend over and he'd whip you. Okay. And that was accepted in those days. Today we kind of go, what? We're going to whip him out with a belt, you know, and it's pulled on the pants even and whip, you know, this is like welts. So you definitely behave because if she said, I'll tell your father, you go, I'll change. And so that's called discipline with punishment. And yet what happened is it didn't seem to work in the long run. The kids just kept having, they kept having problems with the kids before me. And then when I came along, my mother said to my dad, let's try a different style of parenting. And he said, okay, because, you know, one of the brothers, it was like, he became a double PhD at Stanford, but had troubles in his marriage later in life. And he ended up having to go to military school because he was, blowing up buildings with nitroglycerin, practicing building rockets, you know? So this was like, they figured, okay, this, we got to do something different with Johnny. And so that's where my mother came in and said, let's try not punishing him. Let's just try just talking to him about stuff. And so I was raised without punishment and I raised my children without punishment and they've done great. And you know, you kind of, if you don't punish your children, how do you get them to control? I'm going to tell your father, you know, what are you going to do when they're out of control? Communication. You can use communication skills, but there's a lot to it. It's a whole system, which we can talk about.
Well, but why do you think parents in our society kind of naturally tend towards this negative approach before the positive ones? In other words, you know, they have to go through those negative ones first and then get tired of it before they go, maybe we should try something different. How much of society, I mean, how much of this is being given to us by society? How much is the negativity that's placed out there that we're having to deal with?
Let me say there's a range of extremes here, okay? You know, sometimes you have to clarify things with extremes. So one Oprah show I watched a long time ago is Oprah was, I used to do a lot of Oprah shows and I was her coach. And there was a show she did on death row inmates talking to their mothers. Okay, how were they raised? And one mother said, Oprah, I did everything to knock some sense into him. Truly, if you go to my house, you can see there's a wall that's red from the blood of my hitting his head on the wall. I'm going to knock some sense into you. So that's brain damage, you know, but basically all this dysfunctional sociopathic, psychopathic, it is brain damage. Okay, there's brain damage. Mm-hmm. Why do people behave that way? And we're learning in psychology all of the stressful communication things that contribute to that. And then Harvard has done studies showing that to the extent someone has felt punished by life growing up, either their parents or life, their tendency towards becoming criminals is greater.
Yep.
Okay, so see, becoming a well-adjusted person means you can have a certain level of empathy and compassion for someone else. Like, nobody ever had to teach me not to steal because I wouldn't want somebody to steal to me. I can feel that would hurt your feelings and you would feel less than. But some people cannot feel what other people feel. And the reason they cannot feel what other people feel is that they were never felt. See, to learn how to feel, someone has to feel what you feel. They have to feel a sense of empathy or compassion for you. And I taught for many years, I taught at maximum security prisons. So I know what I'm talking about. These are prisoners who created violent crime, literally don't think about what somebody else might feel. They think about what they feel or what they think is right or what their automatic reactions are. And punishment is the appropriate form of control when you don't have a way of controlling through communication. So probably 25 years ago, I did a documentary on parenting without punish. And I still have timeouts. I still have lots of techniques, you know, but the punishment where you inflict guilt, shame, or pain on your children in order to motivate them to follow your direction. That's what I've been able to raise my kids, and my parents were able to do it with me. So I know it's possible. And it takes good communication and talking. But before children will hear what you say, you have to learn how to communicate with them where they feel heard without you feeling controlled by them. So, you know, often we say, you're not listening to me. That means you're not doing what I say. So right. That's not what I mean. That means being able to hear a child doesn't mean you're going to let them control you in any way, but to hear their feelings, validate their feelings, help them understand what they're feeling so they can let it go. And that's the amazing thing we now know is with all the years of counseling and therapy, there's a growing knowledge that when people have stress and upset emotions, that first of all, they can't think clearly. Second of all, they can't change behavior. They tend to be stuck in routines, ruts of the brain. And if they can understand, if they can bring those feelings out and talk about them in a way that makes sense to them, if it's negative, the brain will let it go. So that means a child crying, you hold a child, you're actually just giving them, they're crying because they feel separate, they're for scared, they're upset, they're not getting a need met, and their primary need is love. So if you just hold them feeling love, their pain goes away. It's literally a need that has to be met, and the child needs to be heard without, you know, without it meaning I hear you and I'm going to do what you say. It's actually I hear you and I'm going to do what I think is right. And that takes a new level of emotional intelligence within parents to be able to validate what children feel. So that was what I found out with all the criminals. And they just needed to have their heart open and they were healed. They never went back to jail after that. Others go back to jail if they don't learn how to feel in their heart another person's feelings with empathy and compassion.
And one of the things that I really liked about the book was it discussed a lot of these things and explained a lot of these things, but I love the fact that you also gave the tools. You know, there are some books that they tell you everything, but you go, yeah, but what do I do? And yours also gives that. So if you could share a little bit, I know that you have like the 5 positive messages that you recommend for all parents. So share some of that so people can get an idea. Here's the tools that fit this situation.
Let's see the 5 positive messages and also the 5 skills that go with them.
But exactly.
A skill is worthless unless you know what your intent is. You have to know the intent and it's an overall context. Because if you really have this overall context, pretty much you can figure out your own skills. I just give some suggestions of what worked for me. But the context is, well, number one is it's okay to be different. What we have to realize is constantly grading children, you're not as good as this person, you're not as good as your sister and your brother, only leaves somebody feeling inadequate in who they are. And often we make the mistake of thinking we have to point out to you that you can be better and you're not good enough in order to motivate them. And some people, it does motivate them, but for all people, they will become motivated if they feel loved the way they are. But other people who have been sort of put down because they weren't good enough and they strive hard to be good or to be successful, often they're very stressed and unhappy in life because they didn't learn that they can love themselves the way they are and be just as motivated. But they think that the punishment and the judgment and the criticism and the demands on them is what made them motivated. And it did. But what goes along with that motivation of trying to be better than others or as good as others. And you see, the truth is nobody is the same. And one of the things I'd like to see happen in early school is parent reports up to like 8 or 9 years old, maybe even 10 or 11 years old. No need to get compared, because the brain that can compare without judging yourself doesn't even develop until you're 13 or 14. It doesn't fully develop until you're 28. That's where you don't take things personally. You know, we often say to children, you're not bad. What you did is bad. Well, a child that sounds good, it doesn't sink in. Right. Just as if you were in my audience at a seminar and everybody got up and left, somebody would say, well, John, they love you. It's just not, they don't love your seminar. I'm going to take that personally to a great extent. So we all tend to, you know, most all arguments and problems in marriage and everything come from taking things too personally, becoming mm-hmm. too hurt by, too sensitive, overreactive to it, because we haven't learned that if our partner is not giving us what we need at that time, maybe they can't. And it's not about us. Kind of like expecting your partner to be somebody they're not. As they're in a wheelchair, you don't say, if you love me, you'll stand up and walk. And so that's where the Mars Venus ideas came in so good, because I help women explain there's certain things that men need to do that are different from women. And teaching men what women need can be different from men. So having that insight gives us extra tools. So with our children, the first one is this first message is it's okay to be different. And in that, mm-hmm. there's three basic kinds of learners. There's the fast learners, there's the steady as you go learners, and then there's the leap learners. And Einstein was one of those. He didn't speak a word until he was 6 or 7 years old. And then he spoke in full sentences. You see, often we want to push one child to be like another. And some children have to sit back and watch for a while, see other people do it. And they're going to appear like they can't do it. But then one day they'll get it, unless they're told something's wrong with you because you're not doing it fast enough. Another child who's really, really good at things, often if they're like a good pianist, doesn't want to do anything else because then they won't look good at that. So if you give them a lot of praise for one thing, they're afraid to try anything new. And so they tend to be hyper-focused in one area. But generally speaking, what I would like to see in schools when you do start grading kids is you have a pass-fail and you have three subjects that you get graded on, and the other subjects, other three, are pass-fail. That way you can take three subjects that you're good at and be a straight A student. You know, nobody's in life. I'm a straight A student author, but I'm terrible at a lot of stuff, but mm-hmm. I get to be a best-selling author. See, it's like, don't judge me by all these things. Judge me by the things I'm good at and I'm really interested in. And then you get to feel you're good enough. So there's a few ideas on don't compare. Right. So then that's number one. And yeah. If you just look at some of the great geniuses of the world, they're always extremely unique and different, you know.
it actually reminds me that one of the quotes that I really like was from John Maxwell, who said that he was horrible in math in school. And so the teachers kept beating him up for that and saying, okay, well, we're going to make you spend like almost all of your time now on math. And we're not going to let you work on anything else. You've got to work on math because you're horrible at it. And finally, he said, when he got the guts or the confidence to say something, which was either like the last year of high school or college, and he said, you know what? I'm going to focus on these other things that I'm good at, and I'll hire somebody to count my money.
That's very good.
You know, but it's like, let me do what it is I do well.
Yes, yes. Yeah. I think that's so, so important. And we have to, you know, recognize also in that context that some things don't make as much money, and that's okay. But yeah. We want to support our children finding their way. Ironically, he was not good at math. I was not good at language and write English. You know, I couldn't mm-hmm. write worth a darn. I was good at math. So I became a computer programmer before I started programming people. And then when my brain was developed, then I could develop whatever skill I wanted to do. And it became out of necessity becoming a writer. But that was never easy for me as a child at all. So that's the first one, is be patient. And what my mother said, let's just not punish John. Let's try something else. See what happens. And then the people in my seminar, when they asked her that, and she said, yeah, that's what we did. Then people said, well, what did you do? And she said, well, we just decided to put them in the hands of God. And that was such a beautiful thing. I eventually became a monk later in life. And then I came out to be a relationship teacher, but I'm very spiritual. And it's because my mother was spiritual and that she trusted that I was going to unfold in the time I needed to unfold, because I think I was a slow learner and everything to begin with. Some people just take longer. Mm-hmm. So that's one step, is every child is different. Don't compare them and don't be worried about them. Sometimes if you worry a lot about a child, what message do they get? Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, I'm in danger. Something's wrong with me. You know, something is wrong with me that mom's worried about.
Right.
This is so important. If I could say one thing that underlines all this, be aware that what you say or what you feel affects your children, and think, if I'm angry with them, what message are they getting about themselves? Okay, it's just, they're getting, oh, something's wrong with me. And if you're arguing and fighting in front of your children, what message do your children get? You may not know this, but anytime parents fight, children think it's their fault. In the same way, if everybody left my seminar, I would feel like I failed. Children feel a sense of anything around them that they caused it. So if you're happy with a child and you're happy and fulfilled, children get the message that they're good enough. Why do we feel this way? Well, one reason is when we come into the world, everybody's happy to see us. So we go, oh, I guess I make people happy. And then when people are not happy, what did I do wrong? They don't know what they did wrong, but they feel like something bad happened, that they did something bad. Ironically, if a child has been abused, they often feel to carry the guilt and shame that the perpetrator should have felt, but they end up feeling it. This is the weirdest thing. So this is just how our monkey brain or childlike brain reacts to things. When we don't get things that we want, we tend to feel we are unworthy unless we get heard and we get understood with love and compassion and promises and support and apologies. So this is all about comparing. First message, we want to be aware of the messages we're sending to children, and we don't want to have to compare them, that they are unique and different and lovable just the way they are, and we all become better and better as we unfold. Second message, very important message, is it's okay to make mistakes. You see, that's why the whole punishment thing is so mixed up, is that we have this, when you punish a child, you get mad at a child, you go in your room, I'm really upset with you, and you should go in there. First of all, as a parent, what you're doing is using negativity to control. Just like in relationships, if you use negativity to change your partner, excessive complaining or anger or any of those things, what we know now is the brain, actually neurons that fire together, grow together, and you start creating pathways in the brain that will cause you to have more and more anger or more and more defensiveness or more and more judgmentalness, the more you use negativity to change people. So when you do this for your children, and also they will cry and get all upset and throw tantrums. And when it works, then they get neural connectors using tantrums as a way to get what they want, as opposed to giving a child the empathy, the understanding, but more importantly, the clarity and the boundary around negative emotions. They're not bad, but you don't dominate situations. But I'm ahead of myself here. So making mistakes, it's okay to make mistakes. We all make mistakes. And anybody who teaches a seminar on success, I'm doing one on trading now, since we're staying home, learning how to trade in the stock market. Everybody always says, you're gonna lose money again and again. You're also gonna win. You gotta be okay making mistakes. It's gonna happen. You're gonna learn from your mistakes. That's what we learn from. So children need to have messages, it's okay to make mistakes. Now, when we never want to try to make a mistake, but it happens, we learn from them. What did you learn from them? Okay, what did you learn from this? These are things we can say to our children, as opposed to when we punish children, that's or shame them, both those things are painful for making mistakes. Then what happens is the message we have is, I lose love when I make a mistake. Therefore, I want to hide my mistakes from you. And that's where children
now they lie. The
truth. And as soon as your children, go ahead.
No. I was going to say, so then they compound the problem by lying about it. Yeah.
You can't change unless you can acknowledge I made a mistake to your parents. Whatever it is you have to hide from your parents, you're disconnected from them. And this is your own mistakes, but it's also, let's say you were molested and the person said, now don't tell your parents. So you don't tell your parents. Now your parents are loving you and telling you how wonderful you are. And you're thinking, yeah, you love me, but if you really knew the truth, you wouldn't right. love me. So that's a wall that we put up as children when we don't feel safe to talk to our parents. So the learning how to listen to children so that they will talk to you is very, very important. And one of the things that keeps them from talking to you about what's going on inside of them and what happens in their life is that they could be punished for making mistakes. So that's a hide from you. And often a child will feel, oh, not punished, but corrected. If they say something that happens, parents want to jump in there and say, you should have done this and you didn't do that, but you could have done this. I never gave advice to my children until they were like double asking for it. I would say, well, what do you think would be best in that situation? Well, how did you handle it? Okay, well, did it work? Well, you know, is there another way you think you could have handled it? Well, what do you think, Dad? Well, first tell me what you think. You know, you're smart. So taking some time before you give your answer until they're almost begging for it. You know, what do you think? What do you think? A lot of kids don't want to know what you think because you're pushing it on them. And you can tell that when you're talking and that you're getting louder and you're pushing. And while I speak about that point, the worst communication is yelling at your children. When you yell at your children, you're basically saying, I'm out of control. And you're in control. You're giving them this unnecessary power or too much power because they're saying, oh, you know, I can upset my parents. You want to be unflappable with your kids as a gift to them. And if you have that as a gift, it like brings you back to your adult self as opposed to feeling out of control. We only get angry at our children when we're feeling threatened, we're disappointed, something happened, but we're afraid that we're losing control of our children. Now, are you aware of that? Generally not.
If I say to not my, at the moment anyway.
Not in the moment. If somebody's angry, I said, you know, you're really afraid. They go, no, I'm not. I'm angry. But if you weren't afraid, it'd be no big deal. Okay.
Right.
You know, always when there's anger, there's also sadness, there's also fears, and there's also regrets. They all go together. And that's part of the emotional intelligence that I teach in the book, what parents can do in terms of listening to your children. So it's okay to make mistakes. It's very, very important. But you basically, as they get older, consequences are significant. But long before consequences come, a child has to have a sense of self-esteem that they are loved and supported. Usually, I think it's around puberty and beyond, the brain goes through a change where they can take things less personally. And at that point, the consequence is, let's say they broke a vase. Okay, well, that vase costs us this much money, but you don't have as much money as us. You get this little allowance or whatever, but you have to contribute to the payment of fixing the vase, something easy, you know, because they don't have a lot of money as a kid, but maybe they get
or earn the money necessary to do it. Exactly.
It's like when you make a mistake, what you do is rather than be punished, you make up for it. That's the concept of I raise my children, you make up for it. And if you do something upsets, then what nice thing are you going to do for that person? And one of the things is apologize is always a good thing to do. And how can you make it up? And just ask them and they'll come up with something and you can say, well, that's very nice of you. That's good. It's kind of this silly thing in our society, which is people who are the most dysfunctional do bad things. Okay. Hurt people and wounded people wound people. So we put them in this jail and we want them to suffer. Okay. You should feel really bad, which is the worst thing for them. All they want to do is bad back. You know, it's like we have to heal them, rehabilitate them with love and support. And that's a whole different subject. But with the children, what you do when they misbehave is you do set boundaries. We'll get to what you can do there. So the next one is, let's say you got a 15-year-old and you say, okay, you're supposed to be home by 11 o'clock and they come home at 12 o'clock. Well, there has to be a consequence. Is the consequence you're grounded for a week? No, I don't believe in grounding, but I believe in a timeout. I do believe in timeouts, but they don't have to be this big timeout of weeks. I remember when my dad grounded me, he did ground me one time. And I said, you can't ground me because I wasn't used to being punished. And he says, I sure can. I said, no, you can't. He said, yes, I can. That's 2 weeks. I said, so what? You still can't ground me. He said, that's a month. Well, then it's a year. I said, yeah, then it's forever. So now what control do you have over me? it's a losing proposition to use threat to control your children as opposed to these skills. So the skill is hearing and then requesting and then controlling and commanding. That's another skill we'll get to. But the five messages is it's okay to be different. It's okay to make mistakes. And the best way you can teach your children it's okay to make mistakes is mm-hmm. when you make a mistake in relating with them in some way or in a situation where they're present and you acknowledge you made a mistake without beating yourself up. So it would be the big mistake I make growing up with kids is I'd often be late picking them up from school. And that's just one of my foibles. And so I'd always apologize, you know, I want to apologize for being late. I said I would be here at this time and I want to make it up to you. So this is what I'm going to do. And then I would take them for ice cream. So basically when dad was late, it wasn't such a bad thing. So I'm going to make it up to you. So how do you make it up to people? But you would acknowledge, see, I taught them it's okay. Everybody makes mistakes. It's okay to make mistakes. An example of this is one of my daughters at 7 years old, I heard a crash. She had a friend over and they were playing champagne tea party with champagne glasses and the girl dropped it. And I heard through the wall, easy to hear the door, little girl saying, don't tell your father, don't tell your father, he'll kill me, he'll kill me. That's how kids talk, you know? And so I went in, actually I didn't go in, and I heard Lauren say, no, it's okay to make mistakes. I'll tell my dad. No, don't tell your dad. So she says, daddy, come. And so I came in the room. She says, you know, my friend, she doesn't know it's okay to make mistakes. She dropped the glass and now she's all upset. And I said, look, it's okay to make mistakes here. And then my daughter goes, yes, daddy, what mistake did you make this week? So and I remember how I got that message growing up in a more loving environment where I wasn't punished. I remember seeing a movie, a black and white movie of a Charles Boyer who had a castle and he was dignified looking like a lord or something. And someone dropped a champagne glass. And I remember that moment where he took his champagne glass and threw it into the fireplace saying, we have so many. And that was how he dealt with it. No shame and no guilt. Think of living in a life without shame and guilt. You actually begin to be able to self-reflect on your mistakes much faster and much easier because you're not afraid to admit it. So it's okay to make mistakes. Next one is it's okay to want more. Okay, often we make our children feel guilty for wanting more or taking more. And as opposed to, you know, the child's wanting all of the pie, you know, eating the pie, or you find out they want the pie. You go, oh, you know, I sometimes would like to eat the pie too. You know, we always want what we want, but we have to remember that we're a family and we share things together. If we all get the pie, you get this much, I get this much, I get this much. And this is a magic phrase I do with my kids again and again, when, you know, when they're taking turns, they're doing something and one's hogging it. You know, it's just, now let's hold on. Now you get it for 1 minute, then she gets it for 1 minute, and then you get it for 1 minute, she gets it. We're gonna go back and forth because what we do as a family is to share. They just need to be reminded of that because they're like little monkeys. They haven't developed the brain yet of human. So you just have to, this is what we do as a family. Now you get 3 minutes here and 3 minutes here, and so forth. So you teach children, it's okay to want more, but also there's other people around. So we share, that's how we do it. And you teach them. Okay, so it's okay to want more. And the third thing, if you give your children permission, it's okay to make mistakes. They love the way they are and it's okay to want more. They're gonna want more, okay? wow. Now, I want you to know historically, children were never allowed to want more and people were not allowed to want more because throughout time, most of the religions say, do not want more, be happy with what you have. Kind of like be grateful for what you have. That's a super great message, but it's also still okay to want more. They're not contradictory, but people think they are. Well, if I want more, it means I'm dissatisfied with what I have. And it doesn't mean that. The nature of life is to want more. And so you can be grateful for what you have and then want more. But when you feel an abundance of what you have, what wanting more is not demanding more. It's not, you know, threatening people. If I don't get more, I'm going to be unhappy. If I don't get more, I'm going to not love you. No, it's basically, yeah, let's see what more we can do. So children will want more. It gives you passion. It gives you aliveness. It gives you your unique abilities come forth. But at the same time, it brings up a lot of tantrums, okay? Because what are tantrums about and what are unhappy feelings about? Half of them are, I want something and I'm not getting it. And so that produces a friction of I'm angry, I'm not getting it, or I'm sad, I'm not getting it, I'm gonna cry, or I'm afraid I'll never get it. That's like a tantrum feeling, or I'm just a bad person, so I'll never get it, I shouldn't get it. Okay, so these are negative emotions, just need to be heard with a sense of understanding and not rejection, and a child will go through them naturally. And I have to give you an example of that.
Yeah, well, and actually an example we might have, we have a listener that is sending a message in right now in regards to a two-year-old. So this may tie right into it. This one says, my daughter has a two-year-old tyrant on her hands, and she gets very upset with me when I give her advice. The only time I can have a phone conversation with her is when they are in the car napping. I read the contents of your book on Amazon before I purchased two copies, one for myself and one for my daughter. It says the chapter titles are amazing. This book touches everything. I can't wait for the copies to arrive. And it says, how would you suggest I try to communicate with my daughter to give her some of the tools I think that she could use with her two-year-old?
Well, just she got the book. That's the best you can do.
Yeah, that was what I was thinking.
Give advice to your children when they're not asking for it. And that's the same thing I'm saying over and over and over is how to listen so your children will want to listen to you. So when you feel, particularly as a parent, that I know better than you, I do not want that message because that message implies I don't know enough. And that's the child taking it personally. It comes across as a negative message. Let me give you an example I think everybody can relate to. And that is, in some way you can relate to it. One of my daughters was not good at math. So I did her math homework with her all the way to eighth grade. And then at eighth grade, I hired a tutor till she was in 10th grade. Then when she went off to college without a tutor, she was the highest scoring student in math. Just to let parents know, if you see, it became a bonding experience for my daughter and I would do the homework and show her how I did it. And then we'd have a conversation about it. And she was grateful to me. So that was a bonding experience. Eventually she learned how to do advanced math. In the beginning, she didn't want to do it at all. Okay. So the point I'm making around eighth grade, that's when I had to hire the tutor. So I just couldn't pull up ninth grade math, geometry. You need those formulas and all that. I'd have to read the chapter first. I'm good at math, but I'd have to read the chapter to do the problems. And I forget all that stuff. So my brother was there, and my brother, her uncle, is a math whiz, you know, PhD math guy. And so what happened is I said, oh, my brother's here. He'll help you. And Lauren showed him the problem. And he looked at the problem and he said, oh, Lauren, that's easy. And Lauren was so upset about that. Yeah. Because if somebody's struggling with something, you don't say, oh, that's easy. Particularly if they can take it personally. And a young child can take it personally. And Lauren really doesn't like anybody giving her advice even now. That's just something she came in with. And I also learned with this child, listen more and give less advice. And then they come up with their own ideas, which are brilliant. You know, she's more brilliant than I am in terms of all these things I teach. She's better. But it's taken her a lifetime of having a role model and then being able to figure it out and add more ideas. So that's the idea there is if your children aren't listening to you, stop trying to give them advice. And sometimes you can hand them a book and say, this has been helpful to me. Maybe it would be helpful to you. I thought of you when I read this because I know I made some of these mistakes, and maybe even if you read this, you could help me learn to be a better person and tell me some of the mistakes I made. Boy, that would be a great invitation. You see, it's the same idea of what I did when women would say, how do I get my husband to read your book? I say, you don't get him to read the book. You see him reading the book. You enjoy reading the book. He sees his positive changes in you. And then if he still isn't interested in reading that book, then you go to him and you say, you know, here's this chapter two called Men Go to Their Caves, which is the most popular of all the chapters, which is, you know, the whole idea of the man cave. That all came from Men Are from Mars.
That's right.
This permission for men to not be like women, to feel like, hey, you know, I need some alone time and it doesn't mean I don't love you. And there's a lot more to it, but that's the simple concept. And I would say, women, just say, you know, here, I'm reading this book about men and women, and this stuff on women is right on, but the stuff on men, I don't know. Would you just read this page and tell me if you think this guy is right? Give him the room to be right, you see? It's just like you're looking to him for advice. If you look to somebody else and validate what they say, then they want to hear what you have to say. So this is in a different way with our children. We want to make sure that they feel heard, and that's by asking questions. And that's particularly when it comes to, it's okay to have emotions. Well, that's the intent behind it, but how do you say it's okay to have emotions? Does that mean that your child throws tantrums all the time? It says, no, you don't do that. You basically avoid a lot of tantrums by just simply giving a child a chance to see they're not going to get something. Now I know you say, now I know you want this, but it's not going to happen today. Identify the want. It's not going to happen today. And I'm going to count to three. And you know what happens at three is we're going to do a timeout and you're not going to get what you want. And so you one, two. So they, you don't just jump it on them. We're going to go do a timeout. But another version, that's one technique. Another technique is basically your child is upset. And I want to role model this one. It was a very simple, we're driving along the car and I've got a 7-year-old in the car and she, you know, we have, these are the days when on occasionally you would have desserts, you know, now everybody wants a dessert twice a day, but there was a time when you'd have desserts at special occasions because we weren't addicted to sugar. Now we are. But anyway, so she occasionally gets desserts and we have desserts, but not every day. And we're driving by the store. It's a hot day. We see a bunch of kids at the ice cream shop. And she goes, oh, daddy, let's stop and get ice cream. Well, we just had ice cream a couple of days before. So I said, no, we're not going to stop. We don't have ice cream every day. Why don't we have ice cream? I want ice cream. They're getting ice cream. Why am I not getting ice cream? And I said, I understand you're angry and frustrated because it doesn't seem fair that they're getting to have ice cream and you're not getting to have ice cream. And for a second, she goes, yeah. Now, why she calmed down is for a moment, she felt, oh, he understands. Because often, I feel hurt. Often children are upset because simply they think you don't understand how important this is to me. Because so many of the times we're happy to give them things that are appropriate. Yeah. So they live in a world my parents want to give to me. So if they're not giving to me, they must not understand what I feel. So you go, I understand, but we're still not getting the ice cream. What? And now she goes to the second level of emotion, which is tears and sadness and disappointment. What? I want ice cream. They get the ice cream. I don't get the ice cream. And now the tears are coming out. Yeah, I pulled over the car to go through this. It would just take a few minutes. And I said, I know. It's very disappointing. You see, this is helping them understand their emotions. People pay me $1,000 an hour to help adults understand their emotions. We have to do this as parents. Start with your children. You'll learn so much. They're very easy. They flow through them very quickly if you don't resist them, pushing them down. I understand you're feeling angry because then the next one, I understand you're disappointed. So you can't be angry unless you have a disappointment and you feel sad. And they, yes, I'm so sad. I said, yes, I understand. And you help them see. And you add to it, you know, those kids, those ice cream must be so delicious. And we had ice cream just the other day. And you remember how good it is. It tastes so good. And I know your favorite ice cream is vanilla. And they go, yes, yes, how terrible. You're a terrible parent. You're not giving me my ice cream. You just let them have their, it's called a catharsis. The tears come up. Mm-hmm. And then basically, You, there's a little calmness in there and say, now, sweetie, she calms down a little bit. And then I say, you know, next Sunday, we're having a party at the house and we'll have ice cream then. Then she goes right into it. No, we're not. I will never have ice cream again. We never get ice cream at a house. And this guy, you know, people go into no and never and always and all that. Now, you know, you're into the deep subconscious mind. So now she's into that. I say, sweetie, I know you're afraid. You're scared. You're never going to have ice cream again. She goes, yes. And they get ice cream. And I know. And I know you're afraid that we won't have ice cream next week. That's right. You won't let me have ice cream. You're a mean daddy. I said, I know you think I'm a mean daddy, but we're going to have ice cream next Sunday. I promise you. And she says, you really promise? And I said, yes. What kind of ice cream would you like? Vanilla? Like you like? She said, yes, I want vanilla. And she had a little tear. You gave her a little hug. And now you move on. Now, what just happened? What happened is she got to experience, I can't use negative emotions to manipulate others, but I can feel what I feel and I am understood. When there's a feeling of love and understanding, she doesn't grow neural pathways to cry and get upset and throw tantrums, because this becomes an unconscious manipulation that's deeply seated in all of us in the conditioning of the past. And we have to change that conditioning in our children by good parenting. Listen to your children and they will listen to you. That's what I mean by that. So that's a practical technique of listening.
We've got another comment that has come in. This is a beautiful comment. I want to get this in. And John, this seems to happen to us every time. Time goes by so fast that we're running out of time, but I want to get this in because this person took the time to send it in. And it says, I read your latest book a couple of months ago, and I just love it. Like all of your work, it is so down to earth and fun to read while always leaving me the most valuable information. I have already shared it with my sister and brother and a couple of nieces. I also have them all tuning into the show. This is from Avery in Maine. And the prior one was from, I forgot to say, it was from Katrina in North Carolina.
Wow. Wow. Well, thank you for those acknowledgments.
So, and John, we have got to do this again. But again, what is the best way in which people can get a hold of you if they want to find out, for instance, like when you're going to do the retreats again? Or in fact, I want to share with everybody that, you know, I know you have supplements. There's a lot of things. If they can go to your website, what's the best way for them to do that?
Okay. So I'm not doing retreats right now because nobody's doing retreats,
right.
But we have online classes. I have an online, free online class called How to Get Everything You Want in Relationships. And ultimately the best parenting technique is a happy marriage. That's the greatest gift you can give your children. So that's A. B, it's a free class. Everybody loves it. Rave reviews. For women, we have a special course called How to Get Me Time. Now, me time means whenever you're unhappy in your relationship, your children will be unhappy. They're very connected to you. So mm-hmm. if you want to be happy in your relationship, anytime you're unhappy, it's because you're depending on your partner to do more to make you happy. So this is a course to teach you at those times of dissatisfaction, how to release the dependence of your partner changing for you to be happy and finding the happiness in a variety of different ways based upon a new knowledge of hormonal needs that women have. Certain behaviors will stimulate the right hormones at the right time of the month. And that can help lower your stress, bring you to a place where you're no longer depending on your partner to make you happy, but to make you happier. And the same knowledge is particular for women in that course. We also have another course, which is called Mars, Venus in the Bedroom, which I think is very important knowledge for men to have. Okay. So these are like happy wife, happy husband, happy children. So those are some practical sources of support for people. And just on the other side of things, we haven't talked about it, but very quickly, mind, body. So many of your children are afflicted with tendencies of ADD, ADHD type symptoms, hyperactivity, hyper brain, hyper focus, playing video games all the time. How to change that? I wrote a book called Staying Focused in a Hyper World for a healing ADD memory and brain function. So that's good to know when your children, when you see they're having these ADD type symptoms. But a simple solution right away is something called grapeseed extract and vitamin C. Just, it's a miracle. It's a little thing. Another one is a mineral supplement called Super Minerals for men. And it's also for boys, or Super Minerals for women, also for girls. Guaranteed in 1 week to make children happier and more manageable, as well as happier, manageable parents. This is like that knowledge. It's, you just go to Mars Venus Wellness Store and there's videos explaining that. The grapeseed extract for ADD. There's a thing saying for ADD, but supplements. Very cheap to do, very easy to do. And the super minerals will immediately lower stress, so the brain works better in our children and in ourselves, so we don't loop and resist. That's the thing we get caught up in, getting stuck.
Yeah, and for anybody out there, what he's saying is absolutely true. I do the grapeseed extract, and I do the vitamin C, as well as a few other supplements. So yes, I couldn't agree more. And again, that website is marsvenus.com. All right. So it's marsvenus.com. You can go there. Any other best way for them to get in touch with you?
Or is that the best one? Would be it. At marsvenus.com. Okay. You'll get, it's a lot. I mean, there's 100 blogs. There's an insiders club where every day you get a different seminar from me. I've got 300 seminars and they're free if you become an insider. Yes. It's very inexpensive.
So again, John, thank you so much. I really just want to acknowledge you for, you've been doing things now that have helped our relationships. Now it's helping us raise children. Just really want to thank you.
Thank you so much. Keep up the great work. Answers for the Family.
All right. And for everybody out there, please put us on your calendar and tune in on Monday, December 7th, when we'll be joined by Rachel Cove and Seth Hall to discuss how their program, The Mountain Method, sets a foundation to identify one's true goals and the mountain they are facing, and then to achieve the self-accountability, vision, and mental fortitude to make real their dreams and aspirations. So for everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. right here on LA Talk Radio.